Paper 8, section 4, which is old single column, page 94. Let's see. You want to read? So maybe just one little thing to note in the title of this section before we launch into it. Remember in the previous paper, finally got to that section where they talked about the firstborn Michael's son and his bestowals in Havona, you know, along with the eternal son's transcendent bestowals. That was the title of that section was, you know, look at the title of this one. The title of that one was The Spirit of Bestowal. Okay. This is Spirit of Divine Ministry. So you might not be too surprised, and you're getting down in here, they give you the other half of the story about the Havona bestowals. And we know that's about acquiring experiential deity for first and second persons. So you know, just by the title of the section, you know, if you're really paying attention, you might be looking for signs of of the mother in this section. So let's just jump in. We'll see where they take us here.
For the Spirit of Divine Ministry. Paralleling the physical universe wherein paradise gravity holds all things together is the spiritual universe, wherein the word of the Son interprets the thought of God and, when made flesh, demonstrates the loving mercy of the combined nature of the associated creators. But in and through all this material and spiritual creation, there is a vast stage whereon the infinite spirit and his spirit offspring show forth the combined mercy, patience, and everlasting affection of the divine parents towards the intelligent children of their cooperative devising and making. Everlasting ministry to mind is the essence of the spirit's divine character. And all the spirit offspring of the conjoint actor partake of this desire to minister, this divine urge to service.
Just one little thing, because it's been a while since we've noted it. So mercy, patience, and just, you know, to give it a little extra oomph to not let you be thinking too passive when they use the word patience, they actually throw in affection there rather than love to emphasize, remember what it means literally, you know, to do to someone, you know, facera, you know, is the root, you know, Latin to do. So to purposely use the word affection, you know, that dynamic that love is a verb, you know, a reminding word, very purposely to contrast to patience. And you'll see that there's that's a theme that he plays on a few times. He really wants the reader to remind themselves, you know, when you start talking about the presence, you know, the spirit presence and all these things that would have a tendency to make it seem less personal and not as dynamic. You know, he'll remind us, but there is a person, and it's, you know, so there's an innate dynamic character. You know, so you just, you know, even right there, very first time he used a word that sounds a bit on the non-dynamic side, purposely used the verb to do there. All right.
God is love, the Son is mercy, the Spirit is ministry, the ministry of divine love and endless mercy to all intelligent creation. The Spirit is the personification of the Father's love and the Son's mercy. In Him are they eternally united for universal service. The Spirit is love applied to the creature creation. the combined love of the Father and the Son.
Okay, so now we got to stop and note the italicized there. And we've pointed out several times as we've been building up here from the Father through the from the universal Father through the eternal Son, that we have love and then mercy, or mercy is applied love. It's one of the ways we often have been defining that word mercy. Well, here you go. Instead of applied love, they have love applied to the creature creation. And just to reflect on the subtlety of flipping it around like that and then giving it an object, to the creature creation. I think that was a previous section, wasn't it? Yeah. Remember at the beginning of the previous section here, and when they reminded us, again, like they started out here with this whole kind of parallel to, Christian thought of the thought God and the Word God. And they were brought that up again at the beginning of the previous section. And as the eternal Son is the Word expression, okay, and then you go a little bit further, and then you see, the conjoined actor is the perfect execution. And so that difference between expression and execution, is being played on with just flipping the word applied from one side of the word love to the other. So to think of applied love for that mercy of the eternal Son, just think of that in a very existential sense. Because after all, just as the eternal Son, just that initial existential fact, it just is. So you're just thinking of the expression. You have, that's why they're using that thought word thing to get you to reflect on, keeping this still in a very kind of initial existential mode of contemplation, that you have a thought, that in other words, you have something that's sort of not really made mindal form yet, but then you form it into a shape in the mind, but it hasn't actually executed out of the mind yet. So from thought to word, and then to action. Just another way that he's trying to get you to reflect on. When you finally take it out of that very existential state of the first two before you have the third person, but once you have the third person, now you have that point of action and things begin to flow. And, like I said, what's going to be coming up in this section? We know that immediately what's going to be coming up is this whole issue of now that something is flowing, there's going to be experience. Now that something is coming out of that and that existential thought word, they're going to immediately talk about this whole issue of those the second and the third persons acquiring experiential deity nature to augment their existential deity nature. And it all happens in this mode. Initially, before you have the seven super universes, and certainly, before you have the outer space levels, but all you're contemplating is that eternal fact of Havona. And you want the question, why do I have a Havona? Fundamentally, it's so you can have this sentence here. The Spirit is love applied to, there has to be things and beings for it to be applied to. There has to be a way to initiate the whole ability of deity to engage things and beings. There has to be an eternal precursor to deity engaging us, evolutionary things and beings. And it's there in Havona. That allows God the sevenfold to come into existence. God the sevenfold is downstepping. Remember when we look at it in the psychic circles in the sevenfold chart, when we think about God the sevenfold and those two parallel downstepped, reaching hands of creator and controller, they're reaching down to engage things and beings. God the sevenfold is in place before you have an evolutionary domain. How can it be in place? Because wouldn't there be no really things and beings? Yes, there are. There's the eternal things and beings of Avona. That's what allows this to get started. Yeah. So this is a very important step to actually flip that word applied around and then have an object to which it, there's going to be an application. All right.
On Urantia, the Infinite Spirit is known as an omnipresent influence, a universal presence. But in Havona, you shall know him as a personal presence of actual ministry. Here, the ministry of the Paradise Spirit is the exemplary and inspiring pattern for each of his coordinate spirits and subordinate personalities ministering to the created beings on the worlds of time and space. In this divine universe, the Infinite Spirit fully participated in the seven transcendental appearances of the Eternal Son. Likewise, did he participate with the original Michael Son in the seven bestowals upon the circuits of Havona, thereby becoming the sympathetic and understanding spirit minister to every pilgrim of time traversing these perfect circles on high.
Okay. So let's just step through a few things he brings in there. Okay, so the first thing, now we're saying, okay, but in Havona you shall know him as a personal presence. Well, we've already talked about it. You know that as soon as we go from the he, the point personal fact on at the center of the aisle, to something that you don't describe as a point personal fact anymore, but a personal presence, we've gone from he to she. In Havona, the Infinite Mother Spirit has a presence, a personal presence. That's where the Third Source and Center has its foundational she-like expression, as opposed to the he-like expression on Paradise. And just notice how they described it. Okay, know him as a personal presence of actual ministry. Here, the ministry of the Paradise Spirit. Okay, remember when we go two sections back, in section two, beginning of section two, and they gave you a whole bunch of names that you can use for the Third Source and Center. One of them looked a lot, should remind you of Paradise Spirit here. You're looking through the list and you go, oh, the Paradise Mother Spirit. Okay? So he's just, and notice how he's wanting you to put the pieces together. He didn't repeat it here. He wants you to put these pieces together. We have talked about this so many times. He wants you to experientially discover the truth of experiential deity. As much as possible, it's not directly said in your face. All the hints are there that you need to put it together. And then you just put it together and go, wow, I get it. That connects back. See, and you have an experiential discovery because it isn't just written there. And that, so that it's truer to what it is. Experiential deity, not existential deity. So we've got, these initial existential facts of the Eternal Son and the Infinite Spirit. Or deity-wise, those are the individuality names. Deity-wise, we have the spirit-type deity and the son-type deity. Personalizes God the Son and God the Spirit. So we have that initial existential deity. Then we're going to bond that fundamental overarching aspect of experiential deity onto that mother-type deity. So now you have mother hyphen son type deity, the mother son, and mother hyphen spirit type deity, the mother spirit, personalized. And now when you have that mother deity added in, just like with the creative mother spirit, going from the creative spirit to the creative mother spirit, when you add in that mother type deity, you actually, even as a presence, it has a personal character. before that, you know, you can have a spirit presence, but impersonal. If it's just if you don't have that mother type deity that gives it this additional, you know, tangibility of nature, so that even though it's spread out, you know, and rather than as a point fact, it's tangibly personal in experience. The infinite mother spirit has a presence in Havona. I mean, most fundamentally, the reason you call Havona the central universe, to use the word universe, you know, so that it's one turning, you know, it's a womb of mind. You know, who's the mother? I mean, Havona is complicated. It's not as simple as a local universe. But most basically, the way you understand why it's valid to call it a universe and not just, you know, some place, sector or something, is because of the presence of the infinite mother spirit. Because that presence is a spirit-mind presence. The conjoint actor is the absolute mind. The eternal mother son, there's a presence there too, but that's not as tangibly, because remember the mindedness of the eternal son is a little different issue. The mindedness of the infinite spirit is the absolute mind relative to the kind of mind you can immediately understand, the kind of mind that you have. You extrapolate the kind of mind you have all the way to the absolute expression of that. That's the conjoint actor's mind, the absolute mind. So in terms of really thinking of a mind womb, like the creative mother spirit's mind womb that we're in here, okay, that universe, that central universe of Ona, what we're talking, you know, so now we're making that, as we're stepping through this, the conceptual steps of eternalizing Havona. We've gotten to that point where we've conceptualized now there is this personal presence, and now it's valid to call it the central universe. Okay. Now notice the other little things they throw in, because like we said, it's a little more complicated in Havona. We're not going to go into all the details, but we know we have this other basic fact that the eternal son became the eternal mother son too, acquired experiential deity nature. And so they mention that in this divine universe, the infinite spirit fully participated in the seven transcendental appearances of the eternal son. Okay, so participated in that. Okay. And very intimately, you know, using the word in, it's a very intimate thing. The two are very much simultaneously superimposed in this experience, okay, of the two becoming, adding mother-type deity to their nature. Likewise, did he participate with the original Michael son? With, okay? How does the infinite spirit participate with a creator son? Directly as the infinite spirit? No. The infinite spirit creates a downstep expression called a what? A creative spirit. Okay? Every time you make a Michael, you also make a creative spirit. Every time you make a creator son, you make a creative spirit. So that firstborn creator son, in parallel, there's a firstborn creative spirit. Okay, that is present in Havona too. It is with the experiences of the Michael son. And if you can't put that together, look what they do in the next paragraph. Okay, but just to stress that before we do that, you know that's a basic fact. They don't have to literally say that. You can put two and two together. There's this downstepped expression of a presence now when we talk about the actual bestowals of the firstborn Michael. In parallel, there's that creative spirit there. And when you work out all of the details of the nature of the central universe, of the nature of Havona, that's a very important piece to understand all the details. So, So it's the in and with. Very careful with their prepositions. And, you know, if there's any doubt, it's like, well, but it says, you know, the infinite spirit participated with. I mean, wouldn't they say that the infinite spirit made it down? No, notice as we continue with the rest of the paper, they speak the exact same way. You know, that he who has seen a creative spirit has seen the infinite spirit. I mean, when a creative spirit is, you know, like our creative mother spirit, her presence here is the infinite spirit's presence here. It's spirit. All spirit is unity. It's completely valid to say that the infinite spirit is here present. To just make a statement of truth. If you want to be precise about the facts, you need to point out that now technically the way the infinite spirit does that is not directly, it's indirectly. The infinite spirit creates a down-stepped expression of really herself, because it's going to be a creative mother spirit when all said and done, of herself to be present there. But through that creative mother spirit, he is present, or she is, the high she is present. I mean, you know, you can back, you know, it's just the same way that the infinite mother spirit is present, so is the infinite spirit. You can back it all the way up to the existential point on paradise. You know, there's no break. He's present too, but he's present through her. God as transcendence is present through God as immanence. All right, so, just as soon as they mention, Michael's son, what do they say?
When a creator son of God accepts the creatorship charge of responsibility for a projected local universe, the personalities of the infinite spirit pledge themselves as the tireless ministers of this Michael son when he goes forth on his mission of creative adventure. Especially in the persons of the creative daughters, the local universe mother spirits, do we find the infinite spirit devoted to the task of fostering the ascension of the material creatures to higher and higher levels of spiritual attainment. And all this work of creature ministry is done in perfect harmony with the purposes and in close association with the personalities of the creator sons of these local universes.
They do it right there. You know, in that we find the infinite spirit devoted. See, I mean, they just, again. So it's very much, you know, just like he who has seen me has seen the eternal Son. He who has seen me has seen the Father. He who has seen me has seen the infinite Spirit. You can always say it that way. Maybe just one little, for the long-time readers, when you actually do have a creator son, choose a domain that is going to be his local universe, goes out from paradise along with the creative spirit. Initially, it's not just the two of them. You know, you're still a long ways away from the primary eruption and them actually, you know, making the brilliant, the bright morning star and the brilliant evening stars and all that, you know. They're not totally alone in that initial state. Someone else goes out with the two of them. Do you remember whom? No, it's a group. It's a staff. The Creator Son has an initial staff. I mean, well, the power beings, of course, they're already out there. They've been out there for ages getting things going. But see, the personalities of the infinite spirit pledge themselves to the tireless, as the tireless ministers. Okay, so that's a little clue. It's got to be some kind of an angel that goes out there. Do you remember which kind? No, an angel, type of angel. No, you're... Tertiaphim. There's 1,000 tertiaphim that go out to be an initial staff before the Creator Son and then the creative, the creative mother spirit start making beings of their own for their local universe. So just that's between the lines there. That's
before there's any creatures to minister to.
Right, because Michael needs a staff. Because Michael has, Michael is, even though it's just getting going, you know, this is an officially recognized local universe in the super universe. There's all of this connection, logistics that he needs a staff for to deal with. You know, and he's initially stuck on Salvington, you know, in our case, Salvington, you know, during that initial phase. All the more reason to have a staff. So,
is that a permanent assignment?
No, that once they start making their own, then yeah. But that's just a very overt way. See that, you know, they not only pledge themselves, they literally,
yeah,
are,
they go out.
Yeah, are put out on an assignment.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. See, so there it is right away. See, you know, like I said, I mean, the moment that they mention, you know, the Creator Son, they remind you. See, so you can go, oh, wait a minute. You know, yeah. They don't have to say that. You can discover that, because again, see, that's part of this. You know, all of the complex mother nature in Havona. They give you all the little pieces, and then you just have to put them together. It's a very complex picture with circuit spirits and all this stuff. You know, okay, but remember, it's the pattern universe. I mean, that's another way that you can know. I mean, if you're going to have local universes that have a Creator Son and a Creator Mother Spirit, those local universes are patterned after the central universe, the pattern universe. There has to be a Creator Spirit in the pattern universe, or you couldn't have one in a local universe. It's a pattern. Okay, it has to be there.
As above.
Right, as above. So, yeah. Or as below, so above. Yeah. Either way you want to recognize it.
Top down or bottom?
Yeah. Okay.
As the sons of God are engaged in the gigantic task of revealing the Father's personality of love to a universe, so is the Infinite Spirit dedicated to the unending ministry of revealing the combined love of the Father and the Son to the individual minds of all the children of each universe. In these local creations, the Spirit does not come down to the material races in the likeness of mortal flesh, as do certain of the sons of God. But the Infinite Spirit and His coordinate spirits do downstep themselves, do joyfully undergo an amazing series of divinity attenuations, until they appear as angels to stand by your side and guide you through the lowly paths of earthly existence.
Just one little quick note there. So, you know, describing angels as guiding you through. Remember I mentioned that. Go back again to the beginning of section 2 and some of the names that are used to describe the third person. One of them they mentioned is the supreme guide. You know, in that, you know, with that in mind, they're thinking, well, you have all these daughters, these children of the third source and center, all of these guides, you know, overarching all of those individual lowly guides is the supreme guide. You know, that's the source of that name, is reflecting on the angels. And again, doing just like we were saying, I mean, as below, so above. That, you know, there has to be a source. So you know that embodied within that, that third person has to be that which is the source for all these guides. And so you can, if you want to talk about that aspect of the third source and center, you can use that name, the supreme guide aspect of the third source and center.
That's good. They also say there to stand by your side.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of goes along with guiding you. That's how they guide you. They stand by your side.
Yeah, I remember, it's very much like that. You know, they're by your side. I mean, they're you know, they're not in your mind. You know, they're by your side, tweaking the environment, making speed bumps and whatnot, trying to get you to to do something besides being a lump on a log, and get you going. You know, they got to get you to the point where you know that if you want to stress the dynamic character of love, you're going to use the word affection. You know, to. You know, they got to get you moving, so that you're a doing phenomenon and not just a being phenomenon.
Are all of these individuations of spirit third source personalities?
No. I mean, when we get to the end of the next paper, they mention that you've got, you not only have first source personalities, but you have third source personalities, and then you also have first source personalities where the bestowal of that first source personality is through the third person. But in the case of angels, I mean, they're in the Father's personality circuit. Okay. But a creative mother spirit is not in the Father's personality circuit. That's a third source personality. And remember, we often talk about that. They mentioned that specifically. That's not only a third source personality, but it's a very special type of third source that can intimately do the individuality of the whole thing, that can intimately identify with all first source personalities so that we can be linked through her together. This distinction is vital. You know, said at the beginning. But yeah, they're first source personalities. I mean, a way you can, appreciate that, take it all the way to the end. Imagine an angel becoming a guardian, seraphim, following a mortal all the way to paradise. Actually going to the point where they are going to become part of a finaliter core, which means they need to get a father fragment. A father fragment. Yeah, they need to be in the father's personality circuit. See? But they don't give you, they don't always tell you. I mean, almost never actually. It's like, well, is this being a third source personality or first source? I mean, you can deduce it sometimes, but a lot of the power beings are most likely third source personalities, because they mention that. But it's not, it's not like you got a list somewhere in the book, right? Details every one of them. Sometimes, it may be that they're not allowed to reveal that. Other times, they want you to work on it and put the pieces together. That's a very important piece to figure out what that cryptic statement is about the nature of the personality of Creative Mother Spirits. Why they purposely say, there's something really special and different about that. They want you to go, and not quit grinding on it until you finally put two and two together.
Well, it's her mind that we mm-hmm. are within, or her.
Certainly. Yeah.
Now an angel is within that
right.
mind womb as well.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. They're plugged into her mind too. I mean, a seraphim is plugged into her mind. They're her seraphim. They're her children. Her daughters. If they're a seconophim, the daughter of a reflective mother spirit, the super universe mother. Okay, now they're plugged into, et cetera. All right, so let's get a little more.
By this very diminishing series, the Infinite Spirit does actually, and as a person, draw very near to every being of the animal origins spheres. And all this the Spirit does without in the least invalidating his existence as the third person of deity at the center of all things.
Again, to just really challenge yourself. You can see he's trying to challenge what we do all the time here, to not just have a very simplistic individuality viewpoint of things. To allow a picture of the third source and centered to not be just some man-like stick figure standing on in the middle of paradise. To allow there to be a core fact, existential fact on paradise that very much should be called he, because it's God is transcendence. It's outside of space and time, absolutely. But without any, not broken off from that fact, but extending out, contiguously from that core existential fact is the rest of the nature. A presence that extends all the way to the ends of infinity. It has a certain condensation in Havona. It has a lesser condensation out here. The basic spirit mind presence that we have out here, and on out through the outer space levels too. So it's all one fact, and it's just there's different ways of engaging that one fact. And sometimes when you engage it, it's appropriate to describe what you're engaging as a she, not a he, because it's not a point fact. You know, you're enveloped in this fact, this aspect of the third source and center. You're experiencing God as immanence. You're experiencing God the Mother.
We're coming from a more spread out spirit, so to speak, mm-hmm. into a more concentrated spirit, you know, mm-hmm. as we get higher yeah. in our mind right. attainment. Those very primal levels where somebody's just barely human, it's going to be a very dispersed spirit ministry.
Right. I mean, and for that lower phenomenon, it's hardly even describable as the creative mother spirit, but more just that controller aspect of a creative spirit. It's just this, energy presence, which gets to be a lot like, some vague notion that you might say, Mother Nature and that sort of a notion, a vague energy presence-like notion. But the more personal you are, the more you're intimately, personally connected to that personal individuality of the whole, and through her to other persons. We aren't just engaging each other as energetic phenomena. We're now actually transcending that level and engaging each other in a true personal fashion through her. But only through her can we do that, because your personality is absolutely unique, relative to mine and everyone else's personality. Our personalities have absolutely no associable ability in and of themselves. They're absolutely disjoint from one another. They do not overlap one iota. Only through her can two true personal facts connect with each other. Notice the other thing they stress in there, because we were already been injecting this whole bit. He was seeing me as seeing the Father. He was seeing me as seeing the Eternal Son. Those thoughts. Notice how they carefully qualify here, so you don't start thinking that angels are gods. The first thing they said was that it was, in the previous paragraph, it was divinity attenuations, not deity attenuations, okay? And then here, by this very diminishing series. Okay. But still, it may be very diminished, and it's just a shadow of its formal self. I mean, by the time you get all the way down to a seraphim, it's not even innately divine. And, they can join a rebellion. They're clueless enough. Okay, there's enough holes in the Swiss cheese. Okay, but still, what's there came down from above. A shade of the infinite spirit. It has earmarks of the infinite spirit. Every angel, when they hold themselves true, is a wonderful little expression of the mercy ministry of the infinite spirit, the infinite mother spirit. Okay.
The conjoint creator is truly and forever the great ministering personality, the universal mercy minister. To comprehend the ministry of the Spirit, ponder the truth that he is the combined portrayal of the Father's unending love and of the Son's eternal mercy. The Spirit's ministry is not, however, restricted solely to the representation of the eternal Son and the universal Father. The infinite Spirit also possesses the power to minister to the creatures of the realm in his own name and right. The third person is of divine dignity and also bestows the universal ministry of mercy in his own behalf.
You know, and all the way to the point, you know, of literally there being third source personalities, you know, really take that to, you know, sort of the nth degree. You know, and, you know, just remind ourselves again, since we often bring up the, you know, that higher recognition that we have with total deity, there's two designations that we have for the third source and center that where we use the infinite for the adjective. Because in two ways, it's important to recognize that third source and center as a reservoir. There's two different reservoirs there. The infinite spirit designation is tied to that reservoir of third source personality, you know, into which you know, the conjoint actor can dip a ladle and individuate a measure of it and bestow a third source personality. So that infinite spirit reservoir of third source personality. Then the infinite mind is the other one. You know, there's a reservoir for, in this case, it's just part of, you know, like there's the reservoir of total will and then it gets split into two reservoirs. Here you have the infinite mind is the total reservoir of all, for all mind activity, not the energy fact of mind, that's the universal absolute reservoir, but the activity of mind is all initially in that reservoir of the infinite mind, and all mindal activity comes out of, is actualized out of that reservoir. Whenever all the activity of your mind came from that reservoir, you know, which is, you know, really stretches, you know, your challenge to think of everything literally. You know, your first challenge is to think of mind as a literal energy, but then to have some additional literal thing added to that, you know, that's even more subtle and rarefied and intangible, and, you know, to wrap your mind around. It's a lot like, okay, you got matter as a literal fact, but then you're going to add this very subtle additional literal fact to it called life animation. Okay? See, notice how there's a parallel there? It's because both, you know, those very subtle things that are added to that matter, you know, that material energy and that mindal energy are both coming from very, very high facts in reality. The infinite mind and the infinite. Clear up there at the top of everything. So when they're expressed down here, they're a very subtle fact that even the relators, you know, when they talk about them, it's like, you know, this is kind of hard for us to even figure out how to talk about or just a little aside, you know, always challenge yourself to try to really combine your, you know, you notice he's throwing in some appeals to your spiritual consciousness. Keep this literal recognition, you know, in sync with that so that you're weaving the two together as you read so that you know, your mind can relate to it in a cosmic way and not just a spiritual way or just a material way, you know, not just a unity way or an individuality way. Try to see if you can have both those thoughts playing in your mind simultaneously, the glory of it and the literalness of it simultaneously. You know, the personal significance of it and just the literal fact of it at the same time. That's right. Okay, yeah, right there we're bringing it. That's a good example of what I was just referring to. You know, when they say to comprehend the ministry of the Spirit, ponder the truth, that he is the combined portrayal of the Father's unending love and the Son's eternal mercy. See, that's that very personal relevance appeal. Sorry about that. But anyway, so, you know, so it's just right there. Yeah, that's right. We got off on that tangent because we were talking about acting in his own behalf. Yeah. But anyway, just, you know, just notice how he does that. You know, and for the beginning reader, I mean, all you really kind of get is that initial kind of personal appeal and relevant part. That's what you pick up on. It's like, ooh, I can feel that. I'm starting to feel the personal relevance of this so-called third person. You know, that's your usually your initial inroad. to the content. But we're trying to, you know, bring in more. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. And
as man learns more of the loving and tireless ministry of the lower orders of the creature family of this infinite spirit, he will all the more admire and adore the transcendent nature and matchless character of this combined action of the universal Father and the Eternal Son. Indeed, is this Spirit the eyes of the Lord, which are ever over the righteous, and the divine ears, which are ever open to their prayers.
You notice it's been a while since we've had a lot of Bible quotes. He's going to pick that up, especially by the time he gets to the last section. He's going to start throwing in a bunch. And his basic play here, you'll see, is New Testament. He's taking little snippets out of the New Testament, the epistles, mostly. This is actually from Psalms, but in this mode that he's in, it's really, you know, he's invoking Peter in Peter's first epistle, quoting from Psalms, really, because you'll see that. I mean, he's just very much in a New Testament mode, so that, you know, that's what he's wanting you to, really kind of be reflecting on all the poignant little passages in the New Testament about the Spirit, and he wants to play them into a context. You know, much more than stuff that you might pull out of the Old Testament. That's his obvious modus operandi here. So.
Does anywhere in the book talk about these transcendental appearances that the Eternal Son
has? Yeah, that was the previous paper.
I just went back and was reading that.
In particular, that section that I mentioned called the Spirit of Bestowal.
Okay.
Yeah.
All
right. Yeah.
5. The presence of God. The outstanding attribute of the infinite spirit is omnipresence. Throughout all the universe of universes, there is everywhere present this all-pervading spirit, which is so akin to the presence of a universal and divine mind. Both the second person and the third person of deity are represented on all worlds by their ever-present spirits.
See how they... The last sentence, you know, yeah, we have both of them have this because they're the eternal Mother, Son, and the infinite Mother Spirit. They both have a presence out here. You know, it's much less personally tangible out here than it is in Avona, obviously. But notice the distinction they make, see, before that, which is so akin to the presence of a universal and divine mind. It's much more, you know, your inroad into the mother-type aspect of the Eternal Mother, Son, and the Infinite Mother Spirit is the Infinite Mother Spirit. Because that's the more spirit and mind together, like it is with the Creative Mother Spirit. You know, she's not only the spirit presence here, but the mind presence here. You know, the Holy Spirit, and in our case, you know, right now, the Adjutant Mind presence. Okay? Both of those together, much more so, and so they refer to that presence out here as a spirit-mind presence, whereas the Eternal Son's, Eternal Mother Son's presence, they just call a spirit presence, and in many ways you can kind of just think of that as like the spirit gravity out here. Yeah, but we mentioned there's also that connectivity thing too that comes into play with it. But anyway, so it's. And that's why when you're going through the circuits of Avona, you can recognize, you know, the presence there of the Infinite Mother Spirit first before the Eternal Mother Son. It's just because it's so akin. See, yeah, you know, it's much more akin to you, and so it's more easily accessible. You know, relative terms, of course. You know what it takes to be able to even do that. You know, it's beyond our imagination, of course, but nonetheless, you know, you can at least appreciate it relatively.
The Father is infinite and is therefore limited only by volition. In the bestowal of adjusters and in the encirclement of personality, the Father acts alone. but in the contact of spirit forces with intelligent beings. He utilizes the spirits and personalities of the Eternal Son and the Infinite Spirit. He is at will spiritually present equally with the Son or with the conjoint actor. He is present with the Son and in the Spirit. The Father is most certainly everywhere present, and we discern his presence by and through any and all of these diverse but associated forces, influences, and presences.
Yeah. And when I italicize prepositions just to point them out, I mean, they do it too, literally sometimes. They really, really want you to get this very early on in the book. You need to pay attention to what preposition I'm using, the author is saying. It's very important. And it's just like I was indicating. It's much more appropriate to think in womb-like terms about the presence of the Infinite Mother Spirit so that there's an in to it. So that you have the Father and the Son with each other in the Spirit. It's like, wait a minute, that reminds me of something. This isn't as abstract as I thought it was. That's exactly what's happening here, right? We've talked about that over and over again. The Holy Spirit creates the capacity, the literal domain space within your mind. So there's the Spirit's womb within you, and what's in there? The thought adjuster and the Spirit of Truth. They're with each other in the Spirit. As above, so below. As below, so above. It's all one pattern. And they reminded you that right here in bringing the Father in. There's a first source and center of all things and beings. No matter how complicated you get in talking about stuff, behind that is one fact, first source and center. So there's only one pattern expression. If you understand any part, you understand every part to some degree. And so you can, just start to think of it in these size independent, or vertical level in the cosmos independent fashion, this fractal-like way where it's, scale independent. Anything, it's expressed simultaneously at all scales, at all levels, this one pattern. So you can always leverage what you know in one area to understand another area. And if in your efforts to understand a new area, you notice that you seem to be just coming up with a whole new rationalization scheme, you should go, wait a minute, maybe that's exactly what I'm doing. Maybe I'm just rationalizing. Maybe I'm not recognizing. It's one of the easiest ways that when you're working with a revelation to know that you're actually recognizing the truth of it and not just rationalizing, making things fit, is if you never have to come up with a new notion. You use the same thought everywhere and it just fleshes out the whole book. When you do that, you get this reality response. So it's like, that's correct because you haven't, this isn't you dreaming up some new thing, the way to explain some other paragraph in the book. You're just doing the same thing over and over and over. You have a recognition, a holistic recognition going. And then in that holistic recognition, then you interpret the details. Discover, recognize, interpret, choose. Okay. All right, so let's see.
In your sacred writings, the term Spirit of God seems to be used interchangeably to designate both the Infinite Spirit on Paradise and the creative spirit of your local universe. The Holy Spirit is the spiritual circuit of this creative daughter of the Paradise Infinite Spirit. The Holy Spirit is a circuit indigenous to each local universe and is confined to the spiritual realm of that creation. But the Infinite Spirit is omnipresent.
Okay. Okay. With the Holy Spirit, again, you can think of the presence of the Creative Mother Spirit as that there's a literal spirit substrate to that presence. And then she has a personal spirit ministry, a modulation upon that spirit substrate. That personal spiritual ministry is the Holy Spirit. Okay. And another modulation on that spirit substrate is someone else's personal spiritual ministry. Whose and what is it? Spirit of Truth. Yeah, the Master Son's personal spirit ministry. All right. As you might already be suspecting, that he's bringing up how we kind of have two different references or implications to our references to the Spirit of God, and that one of them a lot of time really is the Holy Spirit. Of course, that's going to be a lot of New Testament references, see. But we've already mentioned this, you know, this first and primary use of this expression, Spirit of God. First chapter of Genesis, second verse, right? You know, in that second verse, you know, it's always translated, the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. You know, the end of that second verse. Or like we were doing, what was that, a couple weeks ago? You know, I mean, more technically, you'd say the Spirit of the Trinity moved upon the face of the waters. Okay? I mean, that is definitively, see, that Spirit of God is the infinite spirit. But a lot of other times, you know, it's not referring to something that high up. But that very first time in the Bible that Spirit of God is used, it's definitively, you know, the third person. In the beginning, you know, the persons of the Paradise Trinity created the heavens and the earth.
The last part of the last sentence, but the infinite spirit is omnipresent.
Oh, yeah, right. I mean, right, again, so literally, remember about the word universe. You know, it's a literal mother womb, you know, domain presence. The local universe ends where her body ends, where her presence ends. You know, that's why it's called a universe, because there's a being that defines that space. It's not just some arbitrary space that's carved up with a dotted line on a map, okay? It's a literal being, you know, mother presence there. You know, it's localized. She is only here. Right now, I'm plugged into her mind. You know, we've talked about this a lot of times. I imagine myself hopping into the Starship Enterprise and go flying off. The moment I cross the boundary of Nebadon, I go unconscious. I come unplugged. Okay? I'm plugged into her mind. Okay? I can't leave her mind womb until I'm a first stage spirit, until I'm not dependent upon that. I can unplug from her mind and plug into the next higher womb of mind, you know, into the reflective mother spirit's mind of Orvinton.
That could be on the starship.
Right. You're going to be in Seraphim. But, you know, so it's very literal. They're just reminding you that she is, you know, she is ubiquitous, but in a qualified way. She's ubiquitous only, you know, in the local universe, and vice versa, you know. She defines the local universe. Whereas there is no such qualification on the Infinite Mother Spirit's presence. Like I said, that goes to the ends of infinity. Okay. All right. You know, so if you were a being that was, you know, linked in, you know, at that really high level, you wouldn't have this boundary qualification. You know, and we've talked about that. I mean, we're, you know, initially we're confined to the local universe, and then we're confined to the super universe. You know, eventually when we're a finaliter and we can go all around the grand universe, we're in this mind womb that fills all seven super universes simultaneously. That's that higher mother that we've figured out. That's the creative mother agencies of the Ancients of Days that, you know, makes that collective super universe womb. Yeah, but you always have to be in some sort of a mind womb. Okay. So omnipresent, you know, all, you know, omni means all, you know. So, you know, over all qualifications of the, you know, in the hierarchy of mothers, you know, again, you can go to the, you know, go to the psychic circle chart here. You know, you have this whole hierarchy of mothers. I mean, her presence is omnipresent. It's over all those lesser domains. You know, it's even beyond the universal mother, you know, the finite upholder. You know, it's even beyond the grand universe. I mean, it's even beyond the master universe, you know, the absentite upholder. So it's very omni. It's not even just absentite like omni. It's, you know, it's really omni. Okay. okay.
There are many spiritual influences, and they are all as one. Even the work of the thought adjusters, though independent of all other influences, unvaryingly coincides with the spirit ministry of the combined influences of the Infinite Spirit and a local universe Mother Spirit. As these spiritual presences operate in the lives of your ancients, they cannot be segregated. In your minds and upon your souls, they function as one spirit, notwithstanding their diverse origins. And as this united spiritual ministration is experienced, it becomes to you the influence of the Supreme, who is ever able to keep you from failing and to present you blameless before your Father on high.
So, okay, again, here we go. That's in the doxology, the little single chapter book of Jude. So yeah, he's like I said, he's going to pick stuff from all over in the New Testament. But you know, this whole bit about why did he bring that in? And it's like, wait a minute, what's this about the Supreme? You know, why did that come in? You know, if you're talking about the Supreme, you know, you're invoking some sort of a more transcendent cosmic consciousness. You know, he's saying you have all these different individual ministries. They all are woven seamlessly together, you know, as one experiential ministry, experiential spiritual ministry. Obviously, the more that you consecrate yourself to the fullness of the spiritual ministry, so that it's not just some little, you know, flicker of encirclement in the Holy Spirit that you tap into a little bit, because you're starting to bring in the spirit of truth and the thought adjuster and the angelic ministry. And the more you get this multifaceted, higher mind, you have a mind that is synchronizing really with the whole and with the Supreme. You're weaving all that together, just like that power personality synthesis, you know, the Supreme Being and the Absentite. Okay. So that's why they're bringing it in, and so think about it. If I'm not just nibbling at the edges of spirit ministry, if I'm really wrapping my mind around some measure of the wholeness of it, I will now have an integrity that I didn't have before. I will be sophistry proof. I will have all the requisite insight to see through, you know, the whited sepulcher, and know that there's just dead man's bones inside. I'm not going to be susceptible to the things that a lesser spiritual consciousness is susceptible to. Who is ever able to keep you from failing? Mm-hmm. See, if you have that full measure of relation to the whole, like we talk, you know, and through her, through, you know, the individuality of the whole, if you have this more holistic consciousness, if there's a definitive actualization of your consecration to the universal harmony of God the Mother, okay, you will be fail-proof, and you will walk on that way to the center of paradise one day.
Present you blameless.
Right.
Blameless.
She is the way. You know, you will be blameless, you know, quote unquote, on the aisle. You will be perfect, finitely perfect. And you will have walked on her way to get to him. So that's why, you know, they that's why he brought that in, you know, because you know it should kind of strike you. It's like, wait a minute, that keep me from failing? I mean, somehow I don't have free will anymore. No, you'll have free will, but you won't be clueless. Okay. A Veranda Deck son has, you know, absolute free will, but they never fail because they're not clueless.
Isn't there a level of not failing when you get to the third psychic circle and you're stabilized there?
And you can still fail all the way to fusion.
Sure.
It's only at the point of fusion that you've, you know, you've actualized that fail-safe. You know, what that which God has joined together, no one can put asunder. You know, yes, you just have the one little atomic layer glued to the adjuster, okay? You know, but that one layer, that surface, is absolutely inseparable from the adjuster. Yeah, you know, so you're fail-proof at that point.
Can you tell me how the path of the sun and this
mother, where's the path? Just a little, I'll give you one little tidbit to kind of give you something to think about. About the nature of the local universe domain that you're inside of. And there's these two creator beings, you know, whose domain this is. The creator son, the creative mother spirit. How do those to weave themselves together in this domain. The type of deity that's a creator son is father hyphen son type deity. Father and son type deity stuck together and personalized. Creator mother spirit is spirit hyphen mother type deity. You know, those two types of deity stuck together, personalized. Well, how do those twofold facts weave together? The local universe has this fundamental threefold actuality structure because it has three levels in it. It has the top level, you know, the actual local universe level, the constellation level in the middle, and the local system level at the bottom. Three levels, threefold actuality, individuality, the bottom, associativity, in the middle, unity at the top. So how do they hold that three-floor structure in place? The Creator's Son is this father and son type deity. The father is the individuality of the parts. You know, he's that fact which absolutely individualizes you. You know, on the local system level, you're coming into full identification with that individuating, initiating phenomenon, making yourself a fully initiated Marantia individual. And you worship God the Father, you know, Father's temple there. Individuality, Father, at the bottom. The Son is purely unity-like. Remember? Unlike the Father, you know, and the third source that have both unity and individuality, the Son is pure unity. Okay, so the Creator's Son is a dipole, the Father and Son. That dipole is stretched across the local universe. It's the boundaries, the bottom and the top. Individuality and unity. And the associativity of the Spirit and the Mother fill the space between. Just the literal actuality of the Spirit being the association between the Son and the Father, universal Father and the eternal Son, conjoint actor, you know, the infinite Spirit. Okay. And then, in a personal sense, through the individuality of the whole, when you add the Mother deity, okay, it's not just filled with actuality of connection, but reality of connection. So he stretches himself across the expanse, and she fills it. He's direction. See? Follow that line of his nature up. She's place. She fills what he establishes. That's how the two work together. And when you're in the middle, on the consolation level, and you go to worship, you worship God the Mother, like it says. Because you want to express, your worshipful state is a recognition that only through her can you make it. You can't jump across the gap. It's only through her. He started you. Through her, you ascend.
He's
the beginning and the end. I'm the Alpha and the Omega. See, the Creator Son is the starting point and the end point in the local universe. And she's the way through.
So how is that he who's seen the Son has seen the Father? How is that? Only through him, how does that all fall together?
That it really is Father type deity that he possesses. It's not, you haven't just seen Father likeness. You've literally seen Father type deity when you see a Creator Son. And literally Son type deity.
It mentions how difficult it's been for I forget the terminology, but to forgive Judas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not for your ancients to forgive Judas, but other universe persons to forgive Judas. Why would they mention that?
And
if he's not around to forgive anymore, they still.
It's not a trivial thing, like you just said, that creating that relationship with the whole local universe. Having that full measure of objectivity is a very lengthy, complex task. Just read the constellation paper. How much effort you have to expend to wrap your mind around the full dimensionality of this initial domain. It's a complex, lengthy process. And only then do you start to have the objectivity to be able to see Judas objectively. It's only when you go through all that and you finally go through all the subsatellites and satellites around Adentia and you finally get to Adentia, then and only then can you work with the Most Highs in their efforts where, when the Most Highs engage a mortal world, they do it independent of individual consideration. Best for the greatest, the greatest good for the greatest number of people for the greatest length of time. It's only if you've gone through all of that that you actually have that the kind of objectivity that cannot take something personally, quote unquote, where you fixate subjectively on something, and don't see it in a truer light. It's not easy for you, and there's lots of beings in the universe that are not dwelling in the upper domains of the local universe nature. They're down in the trenches in many ways with us, and there's a lot of trenches all the way up until you get to Salvington. So there's a lot of beings that have the same kind of struggles with objectivity that we do. Like we said, lots of seraphim fell victim. In many ways, you remember we've talked about how the numbers actually got worse, as you went up till you finally got to an integrous enough level. Initially, the less solid grounding you had in the Father, the easier it was for you to kind of get a little bit fuzzy on this and not be sophistry proof. A greater percentage of primary midwares joined the rebellion than secondary midwares. a greater percentage of the primary staff join Kalagastia than the secondary staff. You know, I mean, it's this hierarchy of unfortunate percentages as you go up. They indicate that the carnage amongst the seraphim was great.
Especially among the administrator.
Yeah.
Chris, that kind of makes sense to me from your analogy. The endpoints are at the top and bottom. And these beings that were closer to the middle, it seems like, you know, they were the ones that really had a hard time.
Right.
It's easy when you don't see those two endpoints. You're further from those two endpoints where everything's unified.
Yeah, you're not firmly planted one way or another.
Yeah.
You know? In many ways, the Melchizedeks are kind of firmly planted here, and the Brahmadeks are firmly planted here. You know, they're very father-like. The Lananadeks are floating around in the middle, and, you know, it can get a little dicey. All right.
Ever remember that the Infinite Spirit is the conjoint actor. Both the Father and the Son are functioning in and through Him. He is present not only as Himself, but also as the Father and as the Son and as the Father-Son. In recognition of this, and for many additional reasons, the spirit presence of the Infinite Spirit is often referred to as the Spirit of God. It would also be consistent to refer to the liaison of all spiritual ministry as the Spirit of God. For such a liaison is truly the union of the spirits of God the Father, God the Son, God the Spirit, and God the Sevenfold, even the Spirit of God the Supreme.
You know, and fundamentally, you notice that they purposely did unity viewpoint designations there. You take those deity facets, the Father, the Son, the Spirit, the Sevenfold, the Supreme. You know, the unity viewpoint. In the unity viewpoint, there is one God. You know, many facets, yes, but one God. Individuality viewpoint, a different story. But the unity viewpoint, there is God. And this face is God the Father, and this face is God the Supreme, and this face is God the Sevenfold. And so, obviously, see, if you take the unity viewpoint, you can just talk about the Spirit of God, the one God. Yeah. Now you're challenging, that's just trivially obvious from the unity viewpoint. Now your challenge is to flip it around to the individuality viewpoint. Acknowledge that from the individuality point of view, here's a creator son, and here's an ancient of days, and here's the conjoint actor, and here's a master architect, on and on we go. We have all these individuations, all these individuals. Can you still recognize that even though when you engage them from an individuality viewpoint and you can, run your hand between them, they're separate from one another, but in spirit, they're still one. Because spirit is the unity substance. They have to be perfectly synchronized. Because spirit is the unity substance. And then, of course, you take it from the unity viewpoint. Well, yeah, of course they're perfectly synchronized. Because when I look at it from the unity viewpoint, I've got one fact, and many fingers, coming down from it. It's obviously is all perfectly synchronized. It has one source. So that's why they purposely put the unity viewpoint designations in there. It's just to, give you that sort of starting point. Of course it's one from a unity viewpoint. All right, so why don't we just, why don't we wrap this up here. You want to just go ahead and finish? Sure. You fine? Okay. Normally we don't do that, but...
Personality of the Infinite Spirit. Do not allow the widespread bestowal and the far-flung distribution of the third source and center to obscure or otherwise detract from the fact of his personality. The Infinite Spirit is a universal presence, an eternal action, a cosmic power, a holy influence, and a universal mind. He is all of these and infinitely more, but he is also a true and divine personality.
Yeah, I remember, like up in the Supreme Papers, you know, they actually got a little bit more technical, and you know, to really talk about this. If we're really going to talk about these it-like facts, cosmic power, you know, et cetera. We'll use the infinite spirit designation to be the non-personal expression, and we'll use the conjoint actor designation to be the personal. So that would be another way to word what he just said here. He hasn't done that here because it's building up to that throughout the book, but you could say those impersonal expressions, that's the infinite spirit. But there's also a definitively personal fact, the conjoint actor. He is also a true and divine personality. You know, and that's very much the he person, the conjoint actor. The she person comes out of the it, comes out of the impersonal. You take the infinite spirit and you make it the infinite mother spirit.
The infinite spirit is a complete and perfect personality, the divine equal and coordinate of the universal Father and the eternal Son. The conjoint creator is just as real and visible to the higher intelligences of the universes as are the Father and the Son. Indeed, more so, for it is the Spirit whom all ascenders must attain before they may approach the Father through the Son. The infinite Spirit, the third person of Deity, is possessed of all the attributes which you associate with personality. The Spirit is endowed with absolute mind. The Spirit searches all things, even the deep things of God. The Spirit is endowed not only with mind, but also with will. In the bestowal of his gifts, it is recorded, quote, "But all these works, that one and the selfsame Spirit, dividing to every man severally and as he wills."
Those two are from 1 Corinthians. I mean, that second one, if you're familiar with the New Testament, you know, or 1 Corinthians, you may know where that comes from. That's that at the end of that famous passage about the gifts of the Spirit in the 12th chapter of 1 Corinthians, you know, where they rattle off, you know, speaking in tongues, prophecy, all that. You know, that classic list. Anyone who's familiar with the Bible knows that classic list and loves to try to figure out which gift that God has given them. It's a dicey section. But that's at the end of it there. After they've gone through that whole list. But all these works, you know, it's all one Spirit. Now, of course, remember earlier on, it was last week, I think it was, when we tempered that very notion that, or was that, when was that? I can't remember. Anyway, you know, recently we tempered that notion about how, definitively you've got genetic, oh, that's right, it was in, I remember where it was. It was in the Tuesday broadcast of Symmetry of Soul, where we were, that whole bit about, do you have some sort of have you been selected out amongst others, you know, as a chosen person? Mm-hmm. No, you've got a definitive genetic foundation, you know, and then maybe you also have an adjuster with some experience along those lines, and that maybe why the adjuster picked you, because it was hoping it might be able to use its experience in that area that you have a genetic proclivity to, that you know, might be able to leverage it a little bit, catalyze it a little bit, you know. Yeah, but there is an arbitrary doling out of gifts. You know, I'm gonna make Chris, you know, this and you know whatnot. Anyway.
Well, it's not arbitrary. Yeah. It is intentional.
Well, yeah. I mean, in supremacy, there are no coincidences in supremacy. You know, it all has a pattern that's gelling in supremacy, but.
The love of the Spirit is real and also are his sorrows. Therefore, Grieve not the Spirit of God. Whether we observe the infinite Spirit as paradise deity or as a local universe creative spirit, we find that the conjoint creator is not only the third source and center, but also a divine person. This divine personality also reacts to the universe as a person. The Spirit speaks to you. Quote, he who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says. The Spirit himself makes intercession for you. The Spirit exerts a direct and personal influence upon created beings. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God.
See, now he's getting into that divine counselor mode where he's showing off and stringing, you know, Bible passages together. rattling all over around in the New Testament there with those. Those last ones are from Romans 8. You may even kind of, did you notice how they kind of sounded like the Spirit testifies with your spirit that you're a child of God, that passage, you know, in 8:16. See, those are, you know, on either side of that there. It's right in that same spot.
Even though we behold the phenomenon of the ministry of the infinite Spirit to the remote worlds of the universe of universes, even though we envisage this same coordinating deity acting in and through the untold legions of the manifold beings who take origin in the third source and center, even though we recognize the omnipresence of the Spirit, nonetheless, we still affirm that this same third source and center is a person, the conjoint creator of all things and all beings and all universes. In the administration of universes, the Father, Son, and Spirit are perfectly and eternally interassociated. Though each is engaged in a personal ministry to all creation, all three are divinely and absolutely interlocked in a service of creation and control, which forever makes them one. In the person of the infinite Spirit, the Father and the Son are mutually present, always and in unqualified perfection, for the Spirit is like the Father and like the Son, and also like the Father and the Son, as they too are forever one. Presented on Urantia by a divine counselor of Uversa, commissioned by the Ancients of Days, portray the nature and work of the Infinite Spirit.
Nice little flourish of poetry there at the end, yeah, rhyming and everything. But, you know, just a literalness, you know, to notice there at the end of that second to the last paragraph, you know, when he says, though each is engaged in a personal ministry to all creation, all three are divinely and absolutely interlocked in a service of creation and control, which forever makes them one. Right. Yeah, we've broken this out several times tonight. You know, just sevenfold creators, sevenfold controllers. Creation and control as one. You know, all of that individuality is one facet of deity. One facet of unity, the sevenfold. Okay? So, you know, just to notice the very direct literalness of their statement there, you know, of how creators and controllers are one in their downreach to things and beings, you know, and you know, what did he just read there? All things and all beings and all universes. Okay? It doesn't matter if it's the local universes, the super universes, the collective super universes, the grand universe, the central universe, all universes. Sevenfold, one. So, I mean, they're always doing little things like that. I mean, you know, nowhere in here did they say the sevenfold, you know, where you'd be, you know, really have it on your mind. But if you're just always thinking about the big picture, they're alluding to it all, you know, trying to get you to think about all these aspects together and this, how the picture fits together so that things like the sevenfold aren't so abstract. You know, it's like, oh, that statement is not just poetically enticing. It's literal. How was it made literal? creation and control don't magically manifest as one. They have to be literally expressed as one. They're one. Yeah. Okay, so, all right, so we're chugging along, then. I guess, you know, next time we'll get rolling on the rest of the story about the infinite spirit.
Is there a paper titled God the Sevenfold?
No,
directly?
No. No, you've got the sevenfold introduced up there in the foreword. You know, you actually start to kind of understand what's going on with it a little better. Finally, when you get way up to the Supreme Papers, when you get to the Almighty Supreme Paper, and they give you those two lists of the creators and the controllers, which is the first time they, you know, and the only time they give you actually list the controllers like that, where you go, oh, I get it. They're parallel, you know.
No wonder it's always been so confusing.
Right. It's again, you know, when you're talking about God the Sevenfold, yes, it starts with an existential source. But the whole point, you know, the sevenfold is what's the label up there at the beginning of the foreword for the sevenfold? It's creature identified deity. The whole point of the deity is that it's the facet that engages experiential beings. It, you know, it's fundamentally this downreach from the existential, you know, to the experiential through experiential deity. I mean, all those individuals are experiential individuals, you know, experiential gods. Just like all revelation of experiential deity in the book, it's very purposely spread throughout the whole. So that the only way to really begin to wrap your mind around it is when you begin to have a relation to the whole, and through the individuality of the whole, you begin to understand experiential deity. They've purposely constructed the revelation so that you have to acquire an understanding of experiential deity through that process. You know, this distinction is vital. For in a cosmic system, the individual members are not connected with each other except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. That's the truth of experiential deity, and this is a revelation of truth. So they very carefully construct it to be true, a true revelation of experiential deity. The existential deity is revealed true as well. Laser beam, direct statements about the facts of existential deity and how it is and what it is. Yeah, because that's the truth of it. When you acquire it that way, you've acquired the truth of it. You've acquired a distortion of experiential deity. Yeah, if you've acquired it in some sort of a simple, just literal, direct way like that, yeah, that's not the truth of it. It's all about aha, that goes with that. You know, like I said, I mean, you know, clear from the beginning of the foreword, they list the creators, and you know, occasionally, you know, they mention controllers, but nowhere to, you know, it's not until you get all the way up there to paper, what's that, 116, right? The Almighty Spring, they finally list the controllers. I mean, it's just they will not allow you to have it all in one spot where you think you've got it, because you haven't. You haven't gotten the truth of it. You have to connect, you know, what you remember it from the forward, and you finally get up to that paper and you put the two together and you go, oh, that's what that was about. Now I get it. That's the whole point. All right, so we'll get into some of the greater details. Like I said, and it really kind of comes to a head at the end of the second paper on the third source and center, where it actually brings up third source personality and all these very, very not immediate things. It's really the only spot in the book that it's directly talked about. You know, most of the time when you're talking about personality in the book, you just have to recognize, oh, this sentence is just about first source personality. That's not true for third source personality, but they don't tell you that. Yeah, and so again, it's one of those subtle things that just, you know, finally when you're ready to notice that, you start to put that piece together. All right, let's take a little moment to reflect on it.